रामाय रामभद्राय रामचंद्राय वेदसे रघुनाथाय नाथाय सीताय पतये नमः. युद्धकांड चैप्टर नंबर 83. लक्ष्मणा कंसोल्स रामा. द रेसिटेशन बिगिंस नाउ. Raghuveer heard the huge roar that arose from the battle between the monkeys and the rakshasas and said to Jambavan that stood by, "Friend, Hanuman is busy with some wonderful act of valor. What else could be this terrible roar of deadly missiles crashing in furious fight? So go out with your troop to help him." Jambavan did so and took his way to the western gate. Halfway, he met Hanuman at the head of a very large body of monkeys, breathing hard with their incredible exertions. Marathi, in his turn, caught sight of the huge army of bears coming towards him, dark and dreadful like dense clouds in winter. He even made them turn back and come with him where Rama was, and with uncontrollable grief cried out, "We were engaged in hot fight, and right before our eyes did Indrajit slay the Lady Sita with a sword as she was screaming and shouting for help. From that moment I am bereft of my senses and came here only to bring you the sad news." No sooner did these words fall upon the ear of Raghuveera than he fainted and crashed down upon the earth like a huge tree. When the godlike Raghava fell down all on a sudden, the monkey lords gathered round him and sprinkled over him cool water, rich with the perfume of lotus and lily. It looked as if a deluge of water fell and extinguished the flaming fire. Lakshmana clasped him to his breast and, so stricken as he was himself with grief, sought to console Rama with words charged with sound reason and deep wisdom. "My dear brother, I shall prove to you that right and wrong are not supported by the canon of inference. If wrong were true and real, then Ravana, who is wedded to it, should have for his portion the darkest hell. Similarly, if dharma was true and real, then men like you, who are ever wedded to it, should never experience calamities. The world hails you as the soul of virtue and justice. If so, pain and sorrow should never find a place in your life. Otherwise, happiness and glory should never find a place in the life of Ravana, whom the worlds condemn as a monster of wickedness. That is why I say that the case of dharma has no ground of reason to stand on. Righteousness that you guard so carefully pays you back sorrow and misery as a reward of unrighteousness. On the other hand, the unrighteousness that Ravana clings to pays him back with happiness and glory as a reward of righteousness. Further, dharma and adharma not only fail to bring to their votaries the results that they should, namely happiness and misery, but they reward their followers with the very opposite results. Am I wrong then in thinking that they have no existence whatsoever? You may say that we have seen examples of dharma bringing us happiness and adharma bringing us misery. Then dharma should bring peace and happiness, that is its legitimate result, to you of all men, because your thoughts and words and deeds ever center around it. And Ravana should reach the depths of misery, since his heart ever twines itself around unrighteousness. But we see that he pursues unrighteousness and waxes in fame and glory, wealth and happiness, while righteous souls see no end to their misery. That is why I assert that righteousness does not bring happiness, nor wrongdoing misery. Further, dharma and adharma cannot find a place in our scriptures. It may be true that sinners reap misery and the righteous men are rewarded with happiness. But this misery and this happiness have but a brief existence. After 3 seconds, they perish utterly. How can this transient dharma bring prosperity to anyone, or this transient adharma bring misery to anyone? Dharma and adharma have but a momentary existence as they are put into practice. Then they are incapable of producing results that should, in the nature of things, follow after a time. The Vedic texts about dharma and adharma are only figures of speech. You may say that it matters not if acts do not exist beyond the moment, for the gods worshipped through these acts may reward us with the very appropriate results. One goes through misery by that power or brings misery to another by the same means. If so, grief and sorrow, the results of that sin follows that God. And he who reaps the results has no part in it. Even so, our happiness and pleasure are the results of dharma. You may say that dharma and adharma are but other names for the Lord himself, who is worshipped by virtuous acts and offended by wicked deeds. Then it is the Lord that brings about and distributes happiness and misery, and he who reaps those results has no hand in it. You may say, a king who owns no master formulates a rule of action out of pure frolic. He rewards those who obey and punish those that break it. Similarly, the Lord rewards those that follow faithfully the laws he has sanctioned and punishes heavily those that do not obey him and act perversely. Let me ask you, does the Lord do so to please himself or others? Then he who has no desire for anything, whose desires have all been realized, the perfect one has nothing more to achieve. He has no ground for action of any kind. He will lay himself open to the charge of making one the four-faced Brahma and another a beggar, and this means partiality. You may reply, partiality never finds a place in one who brings it to manifestation souls according to their previous acts. Why can he not easily impel souls to confine themselves to the path of virtue? He who knows everything cannot stain himself with this blot. Why not to go further and charge him with utter mercilessness? Let us say that he gives them the judgment to do acts of virtue and vice, consistent with their deeds and former births, through the stream of karma coming down from beginningless time. Well, the acts of previous lives gives one the impetus to do similar acts in this life too. The very same reason impels him to do acts of virtue in coming births. Thus one should consistently commit himself to a life of virtue or vice all through and reap the results thereof all through in the shape of pleasure and pain. But it is not so in this world. There is no rhyme, no reason in what takes place here. Let us say that the power that brings about the results of action is what is known as apurva, which is generated by the action itself. Well, that power is not to be seen by inference or direct proportion, and the highest good of man cannot be the outcome of that force. If there is any such thing as dharma, no sorrow or calamity can touch you who are its life and soul. But you are now in the very grip of unbearable misery, so there is no such thing as a law of karma, and there is no room for the element apurva since its results are not manifest. How do we say that the cause does not exist simply because we do not sense the results? Then we should posit the non-existence of objects beyond the reach of senses. Even though we do not come by the results patently, we can infer the cause if there exists any of the auxiliaries. Now, dharma, which is the chief cause and manliness, the auxiliary one, and its absence counts for the absence of happiness too. Dharma cannot produce results independently of any other power. It is not able to do anything by itself. Happiness must be the outcome of something else that endows it with the power. So I think that there is no call to practice primarily that dharma is spasmodic, weak, and unable by itself to give one happiness. In the achievement of any object, dharma is but an accessory to manliness. So it is open to us to lay aside dharma and devote the same energy to the development of manliness. You may say that though dharma in general is subject to the above defects, the particular dharma of keeping one's promise should at all costs be practiced. Well, you hold that it is dharma to keep one's word. But our father was the first to go against the dharma. He promised to make you the prince and the heir. Did he do so? Then he was the first to run his back upon dharma. Though you are his firstborn and endowed with all divine excellences, he doomed you to a life of misery in the dreadful forests and drove you forth from the kingdom without a spark of pity. It is but just that he should be placed in confinement and in chains. Ought we not to deal punishment to those that swerve from dharma as it is enjoined in the scriptures? You who promised to carry out the word of your father, why did you not do so? He proclaimed before the people assembled that he would crown you. That was a father's promise. And his exiling you to the woods was also a father's promise. Why then did you choose to disregard the first and carry out the second? It seems that you did not guard truth well and justly. Even if dharma and adharma exist, a king should not pursue either blindly or without discrimination. Great men have ever held that one should practice both according to the results desired and consistent with the changing times. If it is the rule that one should practice dharma alone all along, why did Indra slay Vishwarupa first and then perform sacrifices to free himself from that sin? Was it not enough if he just performed sacrifices? If it is the law that one should indulge in adharma all along consistently, then Indra need not have slain Vishwarupa and performed sacrifices later on. It is quite enough that he just slew him. It is said that Indra, Varuna, Parjanya, Yama and Ishana belong to the border caste among the Devatas. So Indra is a Kshatriya, has practiced dharma and adharma according to the changing times. If one should practice either exclusively and all the time, he is sure to be ruined. So they should be taken in hand as befits the changing times and practice together. I have not the least doubt on this matter. Now, wealth is absolutely necessary for the proper practice of dharma, and you gave it up when you threw away the kingdom that was within your grasp. Then how could you hope to carry out your dharma? Rivers flew from the mountaintops, and you protect your people and take from them a sixth of their earning, which goes to meet the expenses of charity, rituals and similar action. As water of streams disappear in summer, even so the acts of those who are poor and weak are ineffective. If you forego wealth, it means not only inability to carry out your dharma, sin follows upon it too. If you turn your back upon wealth and luxury to which you have been accustomed since your birth, you will drive to acquire riches through unfair means. For you cannot in the nature of things forego what you have been used to, and that leads to sin. A rich man is sought after by friends, kinsmen gather around him. He is considered a learned man. Verily, a rich man alone is a man. A poor man is like a weak woman. A rich man is valiant, he has brains, he is a hero endowed with all excellences, and one who casts away wealth rejects all the perfections mentioned above and seeks the opposite. I cannot for the life of me see what excellence you were after when you threw away with both hands the kingdom that was yours by right and betook yourself to the dark and dreary woods. Success crowns him who utilized his wealth to acquire virtue and realize his wishes. He who, having thrown away his wealth, moves heaven and earth to acquire new wealth, but wastes his efforts. Nay, virtue and fulfillment of desires are not the only outcome of well-spent wealth. Delight, satisfaction, pride, virtue, anger, self-control, and peace all are lit up by wealth. The highest gain hereafter is not the only result of wealth. Nay, it brings to us every kind of other happiness there is too. And you have it not. Happiness comes not to those who slight wealth when it seeks them and follow dharma alone. Just as one does not see the sun and the planets when the sky is covered with the rain clouds, I do not see in you the wealth from which comes happiness. Behold the miseries that have befallen you who put away the kingdom that was a root of all good and greatness and followed obstinately the duty of carrying out the promise made by your father. She who is dearer to you than your very life, Janaki, has been carried away by the Rakshasas. My valor and strength will today undo the evil that Indrajit has done to us. Best and bravest of the Raghus, awake and arise. I will pay him in his own coin and chase away your sorrow. Why do you not remind yourself that you are the omniscient supreme? How can grief and confusion have any part in you? How could they arise in you, soul of virtue, untouched by sin? Here am I, born to no other purpose than to carry out your least wishes and commands. I but follow you as a very shadow with the sole hope of such service. The sight of Janaki, the beloved daughter of King Janaka, the knower of the supreme truth, being put to death by this wicked Indrajit has filled me with anger. My arrows will make short work of Lanka, its armies, and Ravana himself. My grief and anger that made me use the weapon of logic against Dharma and Adharma. Now I await your orders to put forth my strength and valor. Mangalam Kushlendraya Mahuniya Gunapti Chakravarti Dharmajaya Sarva Bhumaya Mangalam.